called Kshatra and Kshatragya. Now, Krishna is moving on to describe or answer Arjuna's fifth and sixth question, which is jnana and jnaya. So, Krishna is moving in a systematic way, but he just skipped the first two questions, and he'll answer them after he answers these two. So, in the first section, Krishna is describing the material energy, the field of the living entity, specifically the body of the living entity, which is the aggregate sangata. And there's two knowers of the field, the soul and the supersoul. So the living entity is situated in that field, and he's limited by that particular field. A living entity that has the body of a worm is limited to crawling around, slithering in the earth, and he cannot dance, sing, or study philosophy. And a living entity that has the body of a dog, he can jump and bark, run, you know, like this, and have sex in the street, but he also cannot sing very well or study philosophy or practice bhakti yoga. So but the human body has that facility. So we can see that there's the living entity becomes somewhat limited in his capacity to act and understand according to his karma and the body that he has. And also, along with that, is his karma of enjoying. So although a living entity may have a human body, he may be also limited. Maybe he's born, you know, in some desert in Africa, or in Siberia somewhere, or maybe in some other far off isolated place, and he may never leave his village, you know. And someone born in Hollywood, California, you know, he'll travel in many places, probably, you know, he'll go around America and see Europe and may visit different places all around the world. So the field of the living entity comes due to his karma, and it also limits him or allows him to do certain things. The living entity therefore accepts that field as his universe, so to speak, you know, his own personal little world, and thinks that that is, for him, that's his life. Just like a child who's born in a house that has a backyard, you know, the parents, they put a swing set and a sandbox, you know, and a little bicycle with a horn, or a little car or something like that, a toy car. So the child goes to the backyard and he swings on the swing, and then he jumps into the sandbox and builds a big castle, and then he jumps on his car and he's driving the car around and beeping the horn. And for the whole day he can enjoy. For him this is like a whole universe, you know, because his consciousness is very much limited, subscribed to that particular area, that kshetra. He enjoys in this way. And basically, he's just enjoying the Mahabhutas and the subtle, his subtle body and the three modes of nature. Everything is there in that backyard. But for him, it's like very enjoyable and seems unlimited. So similarly, the living entity, when he comes into this universe, he's like that child, because he has, you know, this planet Earth, and he has so many countries, and he's working and communicating and traveling, and he's selling things, and he's marketing things, and he's on the internet, and he has his field, and he thinks, yes, this is wonderful. And he can engage himself throughout his lifetime in that same field, but it's compared to someone on a higher planet, maybe like on Brahmaloka, it seems like a sandbox or a swing set in a backyard. It's very much limited. But the conditioned soul, he's like a child. He's immature, so he's thinking, yes, I'm enjoying. Now I'm going to Delhi. Now I'm going to London. And I'm going to do this and make money. And I've met these friends. And I'm having this business. And da 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 da. But he's just like a child, you know, playing in a sandbox. For someone who has mature spiritual consciousness and who sees that this world is just made of Bhumir Apanalovayu Kamanu Buddhi Evicha Hankara. And so that person sees that this material world is also dry. Just like when the child grows up, you know, the sandbox has no more attraction for him. And the swing set and the toy car, you know, he's no longer enamored or attracted at all by these things. He couldn't even imagine going in the sandbox anymore when he's, you know, 12 years old, 15 years old. Now he's going to school. He's going to play ball, cricket with his friends. Right? It's only the young children, you know, they're 2, 3, 4 years old. They're playing in the sandbox. Like this. So when the living entity actually matures to a higher consciousness, then he sees the world like this, like a playground, which is very boring. It's dry. There's nothing there for him. So it's just a matter of maturity of consciousness, how you see this material world. It's actually just the field of these Mahabhuti, Hankara, all of these things mentioned, 24 elements, that's it. The five sense objects, and you're using your Gyanendriya, Karmendriya to work and see and understand things. So Krishna is describing this field in detail in 6 and 7, and now he said, this is it. This is the kshatra and the vikaras of the kshatra on the subtle plane. And really, it's really not much there. There's icha, dvesha, and sukha, and dukkha. Basically, that's the dualities. You know, you want and you hate. And you accept and you reject. And you're happy and you're distressed. You're sad. And that's about it, basically. You know, there's some, you know, other words, that is some conviction or whatever to do those things. To get what you want, to get that happiness, that's basically the dhriti, right? It's very, it's a boring drama. You know, like on the outside of the drama houses, at least in Europe and America, they have these gargoyles. One face with a big smile, and the other face with a frown. They have these faces on the drama houses. theaters, you know. I don't know if they have that here. There's only two faces, sukha and dukkha, you know. And it's quite boring, you know. It's just like you watch these American fugitive television shows and movies. And, you know, after you've seen a few of them, then, you know, it's like you've seen it all. You can keep watching them, but it's the same thing, you know, over and over again, or some kind of soapbox or situation comedy, you know, of some family, and then there's always some conflict, and then they solve the conflict. That's the whole plot of, you know, every single series of, you know, 120 shows that they show on television. It's very boring. So the material world is like that. It's like you already know it. You've played it out many times before. And then you get to the point where, you know, come on, this is, don't expect me, I'm going to play this again. Put me back in the sandbox? Come on, I'm 20 years old. You know? Now I want to do something more. So just in case you're trying to understand this, the Brahma Pucham, the five kinds of consciousness, which is subjective and objective simultaneously, these are coverings or koshas, kind of concepts for the soul. And so they have to do with the person kshetra. And mainly it's kind of going on the subtle plane. It's a self-concept. It's like, it has to do with the subtle body, the hankara, and the intelligence, the buddhi, and the mind. And the person thinks, you know, at a child stage, you know, what can I eat? What can I eat? And then at the higher pranamaya, you know, that form, that life, and this life and my life, is all different. And then there's, oh yes, let me consider this, let me feel that, let me think about this. Okay, now then I decide to do this. Then it becomes a little bit more developed. But it's just the development of the subtle body with the self-concepts. And the person comes to react, how that person acts in this field is based upon his self-concept, which is these Brahmapuccha, which is described there in text 5 in the commentary. Right, so it's in that verse Krishna said knowledge of the kshatra and the kshatragya has been described in detail by other rishis in other Vedas, and that's describing the kshatragya, the soul, and when he's stuck into his body and he has these basic five self-concepts which are progressively developing. Okay, so now Krishna is going to describe jnana, which has nothing to do with the field of activities, but it rather is the sadhana, or 20 kinds of sadhana, or practices to get out from this field, this sandbox. How to get out from this? This is now being described. These are the 20 sadhanas to obtain the goal. The process of knowledge has nothing to do with the field of activities, but rather, it's not under the modes of nature, it's not under the field, the category of kshatra, but it is rather the means to get out from that encasement. You already have a question.
Regarding this panchakosha, why are we considered the objective energies of the Lord? Is it that the soul with that level of self-concept is covered by a particular energy, and other soul is more evolved soul is covered by a different type of energy? How are they objective self-concept? Why are they considered objective energies of the Lord also?
I would say the living entity is covered by the same koshas, but they're like kind of like onions. Onion skins, they kind of develop to the next, like a skin, a snake kind of shedding its skin, and then it grows to the next, or a tree, it has its rings. So the living entity is, covered by this kind of energies of the Lord, and he, according to his development, he grows in them and then out from them to the next stage. So I see it like that. Although I haven't heard it described, like I don't have any, evidence to describe. That's my concept of how it works from what I understand just from, I guess, from hearing and experiencing life in general. It seems that not that the Lord puts different energies on different living entities, but they deserve those. Of course, maybe the lower life forms, maybe they only have anamoya and pranamoya or something like this. They're limited to those. But the human being can experience the entire range. But still, those things are all five present, but they kind of grow into them and out of them to the next stage. Other than that, I couldn't say more. It's, well, there's also five of them, isn't there? It seems so. I had some note somewhere, I don't remember, and I was... What was it? I forget. Not exactly to those by Bhaktivinoda Thakura, but... I can't remember now. I'd have to look. I had some notes that deal with this. It seems quite relevant. But it's like, it seems very similar, five stages. I would be willing to bet that they're similar, they're parallels. Susupti, Turiya. That's four stages. What about Swapna? Turiya. Oh, Turiya. Susupti is the lowest. Then Swapna, then Jagrati.
No, Susupti is third.
Huh?
Susupti is third. Jagrati, Swapna, Susupti.
Jagrata, Swapna, Susupti, Samadhi.
Samadhi is on top.
So Samadhi, Jagrati, Swapna, and Susupti. There's another group of things. What was that? I just can't believe it. I can't remember. Right. There's also five kinds of knowledge that Prabhupada describes in many places. That's paroksha, pratyaksha, paroksha, aparoksha, adhoksija, and aprakata. That's also similar. But, I wrote it like this. Do we have a marking pen? And can you erase this? The board should be erased every day. And there should be pens. So pratyaksha, I think I wrote as anam maya and pranamaya. And then paroksha jnanamaya, aparoksha vijnanamaya, and anandamaya is adhoksaja, and aprakrita is beyond that. Because aprakrita means ragamarg, or it means Galoka Vrindavan. It means Krishna, who's Swayam Bhagavan, who's above Vishnu, who's above Adhoksaja Vishnu Bhagavan. So Krishna's more than Bhagavan. So Anandamoy, therefore, in that comparison, would be equal to Bhagavan or Vishnu worship. And that makes sense. It corresponds from what I've heard. Yeah. So. Have these okay, I'll write those things anyway. Yeah. This is pratyaksha again. Paroksha. And then beyond them is property. Okay, so do you know those Sanskrit terms for budding, covered, sankuchita or something?
Avrita.
Huh?
Avrita, covered completely.
Avrita. And then?
Sankuchita.
And this is Chaitana, huh?
Chaitana.
Next one?
Sankuchita.
Mukuli. Vipra.
Vikasit.
That means blooming. Let's write the English too. This is cover. Okay, I know that much. This is budding.
Budding.
Now what is this one? This is cover, this is?
Cover is limited, or like stunted.
Stunted. Budding, flowering, or blossoming? Yeah, blossoming. And this? Purna Vikasi? Oh, that's four. Purna Vikasi. Now he describes the religion according to these five levels in different writings also. I guess we'd have to get some Bhaktivinoda Thakura's full description to make the analogy. But it does seem to correspond. Aprakrita jnana. These are all forms of knowledge. This is Swayam Bhagavan, Krishna in Goloka. So, in order to go there, you have to forget that he's in Hoksaja. And we love this. I would say it's, but probably Bhaktivinoda Thakura's understanding of this would be here, I would think. You know. So I would think that Purnivikasita includes both. But again, we'd have to kind of go into all the books and see. You know, this is like, I can see, Aishwarya. Again, Mishra Bhakti. And then this is Aishwarya Shunya. Jnana Shunya Bhakti. Means Aishwarya Gyanshin. Because here there's also Ananda. Anyway, I'm not. I think this would be in the Bhakti Sarabhoma level. Because we'd have to get Bhaktivinoda Thakura's books and draw out his explanation of his stages and so forth. But these fit very, very much in here. So we can see that modern society is mainly in pranamoy, anamoy, and pranamoy, and so that means they're only up to pratyaksha jnana. It's only sense perception. They don't have any higher knowledge by which to bring them to paroksha, even to paroksha jnana. They're not following any system of knowledge. It's just like animal life, basically, not much more than that. Pranamoya is kind of, you know, polished animal life, where you have some set of rules by which people can try to survive together in a community. You have some kind of board or community members, and you have I don't know what they call it, kind of business club, business group of people who decide certain rules of business in the community, in the town, in the city. But that's, you know. But the goal is mainly just to enjoy the senses. So anyway, there's nothing higher than this. Let's here how the sadhana to get out from this encasement. So let's chant these verses together. Amanidvam vadam bhitva ahimsa shantirajavam acharya upasanam shaucham staryam atma vinigraha indriyateshu varagyam anahankara evacha janma mrityu jaravyani dhuka doshanu darshanam asatyana bhishvanga putra dara grihadishu Nityam cha samachittatvam ishtanu tishto papitishu mai chananya yogena bhaktir avyabhicharani vivikta desha sevitvam arithir jana samsari adhyatma jnana nityatvam tatva jnanartha darshanam etaj jnanam iti proktam Ajnanam yadatonyata. Humility, pridelessness, non-violence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of the false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge, and besides these, whatever there may be is ignorance. So these are 20 general means to attain knowledge, jnana, basic knowledge of the jivatma and the paramatma. Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur says that the advanced or specific knowledge of paramatma is given later. It will be explained later by Krishna. So these are not the vikaras or any transformations of the kshatra, but rather these are the means to get out from this, or remedies that destroy the vikaras of the kshatra. And Balaji Vidyabhushan says that, let's go one step at a time here. Prabhupada mentions that the first line of the 11th verse is the most important one, ananya bhakti. Ananya yogena bhaktir avyabhicharani. And mayi means in my form of Shamasundar, or Kunji Bihari. And avyabhicharani means continuously without any break. So Prabhupada mentions in his commentary here that this process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being an interaction in the field of activity. But actually, this is the real process of knowledge. If one accepts this process, then the possibility of approaching the absolute truth exists. This is not the interaction of the 24 elements as described before. This is actually the means to get out of the entanglement of those elements. The embodied soul is entrapped by the body, which is a casing made of 24 elements, and the process of knowledge as described here is the means to get out of it. Of all the descriptions of the process of knowledge, the most important point is described in the first line of the 11th verse, Mayi Chanyena Yogena Bhakti Avyabhicharani. The process of knowledge terminates in unalloyed devotion to the Lord. So if one does not approach, or is not able to approach, the transcendental service of the Lord, then the other 19 means are of no particular value. But if one takes to devotional service in full Krishna consciousness, the other 19 items automatically develop within him. as confirmed in the Bhagavatam, yasyasti bhakti bhagavati akinchana savergunaistatva samasate sura. So that's the most important one. If you do that one, then all the rest develop. And if you don't do that one, then the rest don't really do anything for you. They're of no value. And let's see, what else can I say then? Seventeen of these sadhanas are general, meant for devotees and jnanis. And the, you know, ananya bhakti is only for devotees. And then the last two, which are mentioned, adhyatma jnana nityatvam tatva jnanartha darshanam, those are specifically for jnanis. Although self-realization, you know, is also, can be favorable, and or it is favorable for us in the sense that by doing bhakti we become self-realized. And when we realize we're not the body, then we're not going to be encumbered, you know, by the subtle or gross bodies, because we're separate. We realize our identity is apart from that. But that's not our goal, you know. It's not, we don't meditate on the self as it means to bhakti. But we serve Krishna and we automatically realize the self in our relationship with the Lord. Sarupena evastiti. Then we get real moksha according to the Bhagavatam, a higher level of moksha. But here, this tattva jnanartha darshanam means to have a vision or an aim of moksha, which is the prayojan of jnana yoga or tattva jnana. And it is considered to be one's cherished desire, according to Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura. So it's not just a philosophical search for the absolute truth. It clearly indicates the goal of moksha. That's your cherished desire, your goal. That's the goal of the of tattva jnana. But in both cases, we see that the first term is amanita, which is humility. And the next one is adambitvam, freedom from ostentation, or it's called pridelessness. Dumba means ostentatious, making a show, trying to show that you're a big shot kind of thing, you know. That's further described in chapter 16. But for both the jnanis and the bhaktas, humility is the first step and most important. And we see that when Krishna is talking of, in the 15th chapter, he also says, what is that? I see. He uses humility again. Nirmana moha jitasangha dosha anyatma nitya vinivrittakam. Nirmana moha, right? So nirmana is first, when he's describing qualities of someone who's liberated or someone who's qualified to go back to Godhead, he begins with this state, you know, quality of humility. And Prabhupada comments that humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. And who knows that he is not the body, anything honor or dishonor pertaining to the body is useless. And Prabhupada brings it up again in the last paragraph of the commentary. Beginning from practicing humility up to the point of realization of the Supreme Truth, this process is just like a staircase beginning from the ground floor and going up to the top floor. Now, on this staircase, there are so many people who have reached the first floor, the second, or the third, etc. But unless one reaches the top floor, which is the understanding of Krishna, he is at a lower stage of knowledge. If anyone wants to compete with God and at the same time make advancement in spiritual knowledge, he will be frustrated. It is clearly stated that without humility, understanding is not truly possible. To think oneself God is most puffed up. Although the living entity is always being kicked by the stringent laws of nature, he still thinks, I am God, because of ignorance. The beginning of knowledge, therefore, is amanitva, humility. One should be humble and know that he is subordinate to the Supreme Lord. Due to rebellion against the Supreme Lord, one becomes subordinate to material nature. One must know and be convinced of this truth. I said it's the last paragraph I'm reading from. Last paragraph. So he begins the commentary with Amanitva and he ends the commentary with the same point, describing it in more detail, why it's important to be humble. So this last set of six chapters is kind of geared towards Gyanis, because it's Gyan Yoga, approaching the Lord through Gyan Yoga. The Gyan Yoga, hopefully, well, Krishna also always throws in some tinge of bhakti throughout all the explanations to help the Gyanis to get that tinge of bhakti and to perhaps bring them, hopefully, to the stage of bhakti. And in the last chapter, we see that is the general idea, to show how bhakti is the best and the best method, and one gets the best result. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur has commented that the devotees say that just as Ananya Bhakti is the way to attain Bhagavad Prema, it also helps to give an experience of the Super Soul. So the glories of Avyabhicharini Bhakti have also been described in this final set of six chapters so as to explain this secret. In other words, the Gyanis and others are interested in realizing Brahman and the Super Soul. So the Avivichari Bhakti or Ananya Bhakti has been described in these last groups to try to explain this secret that you can realize Paramatma through bhakti also. So let's look at these qualities. After humility and prayerlessness, since we have non-violence, forgiveness, and simplicity, which are certainly to be accepted in all yogas, all religions. And then Acharya Pasanam, which comes before Ananya Bhakti Yoga. One must approach the Acharya. Prabhupada writes, the principle of accepting a spiritual master, as mentioned in the 8th verse, is essential. Even for one who takes to devotional service, it is most important. Transcendental life begins when one accepts a bona fide guru. The Lord clearly states here that this process of knowledge is the actual path. So then you have cleanliness, steadiness, sense control. Renouncing the objects of the senses. Absence of false ego. Let's see, what else does Prabhupada... He gives definitions for all of these things. Nonviolence means not to put others into distress. Tolerance means one should practice to bear insult and dishonor from others. Simplicity means to be straightforward so that you can even disclose the truth to your enemy. Prabhupada mentions the spiritual master also, again. He says, because a bona fide spiritual master is a representative of Krishna, if he bestows any blessings upon his disciple, that will make the disciple immediately advance without the disciples following the regulative principles. So it doesn't mean that the disciples, you know, smoking dope and having illicit sex and, you know, getting the blessings of the guru. But here it means, as I said before, following the regulative principles means following the angas of bhakti. So it means that the disciple can, without long practice of vaidhi sadhana, he can attain higher states of bhakti. Very quick, by quickly following the usual process, he can quickly achieve the results. And because Prabhupada explains that the regular principles will be easier for one who has served the guru without reservation. Then cleanliness is internal and external. Oh, by the way, in the class, Prabhupada said that, but who is Acharya? One who knows the purpose of the Vedas and practices it, and teaches his disciple, and he has received Vedic knowledge through the parampara system. You have to approach him. Not that, if I like, I can go to a guru, if I don't like, I can learn from books. No. So one must approach the Acharya, the spiritual master. Prabhupada describes about detachment from children, wife, and the home. He says, it is not meant that one should have no feeling for these. They are natural objects of affection, but when they're not favorable to spiritual progress, then one should not be attached to them. Doesn't mean one should, you know, dump them in the river or leave them, but one would naturally not be attached to them, as attached to them as if they were devotees, or if they were at least, you know, favorable and encouraging you on the practice, on the path of bhakti. Again, he chants the full Maha Mantra in the commentary. And he talks about Grihastha life. He says, you do these four things, then the home will be pleasant. Chant Hare Krishna, take prasadam, or offer the bhoga to the deity. Discuss books like Gita and Bhagavatam, and deity worship. If you do these four things, then you'll be happy, even in Grihastha ashram. And you can sit down, and again he chants the full Maha Mantra in the commentary. He says, so if one does these four things in the home, there's no need to give up family life, to renounce life. But if it is not congenial or not favorable for spiritual advancement, then family life should be abandoned. So that's, because like, he's explaining the application. That's the guru's job. You see some statement, putra dhara grihadishu asaktir, right, anabhishvanga. So you're supposed to be detached from these. But how do you do that? What does it mean? And what are the principles behind it? In the Hitopadesha, it is mentioned that the following combinations are very rare. That charity with sweet words, because usually people give charity in somewhat of a begrudging mood. Knowledge without pride. Because most people have knowledge are proud. Then valor or courage with forbearance. Because someone who's very courageous, like on the battlefield, for him to control his anger and to be patient, you know, that is rare. Because usually people who are courageous, they can easily get anger, controlled by anger. And wealth, for someone to have wealth and to have simultaneously a charitable disposition, this is also rare. In other words, most wealthy people are misers. Charity and sweet words, knowledge without pride, courage without anger or with forbearance, and wealth with charitable disposition. Although, my God, although these aren't really qualities per se, because, you know, we have, you know, approaching the guru, that's not a quality. It's an actual process. But the other ones, like cleanliness, could be seen as a quality or a practice. Or they become a quality by practicing them. Humility is actually a practice, but it's something that you can imbibe. This janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha dosha anudarshanam, this anudarshanam means that one should contemplate this again and again. Anu means to follow, and here it means that one should do it again, following it again and again, meditating on this, the miseries of birth, death, disease, and old age. In the Mayi Chanyanya Yogena, the word cha indicates that Krishna also accepts Jnanamishra Bhakti. Because you have Ananya Bhakti cha. It means something else. Krishna also accepts Jnanamishra Bhakti. At least in this section of the Gita. Krishna is very kind. I mean, if he can accept Putana, then surely he can accept again a Mishra Bhakta. You know. What is that? Where is that coming from? That's our stage. Huh? The hotel. Oh, they're going to have a party tonight, huh? Great. Saturday night. Huh? Does anyone have a good set of earplugs they can lend me? Prabhupada said in a lecture, chant Hare Krishna, because in this age it's very difficult to follow the process of knowledge, like Amanitvam. So just chant Hare Krishna. How? Well, this is a section dealing with jnana. Cha means also. So, pure devotion and something else. Now, what is that something else? The acharyas have explained that it means jnanamishra bhakti. Yes. In the beginning of the commentary, right? Yes. All right, yeah. Mm-hmm. How can we use this? Well, it is said that if one does bhakti properly, then he doesn't have to endeavor extraneously or separately to develop these qualities. They come automatically. But at the same time, one doesn't have to do something like separately from the process of bhakti, but within the process of bhakti, the person should at least be aware of the qualities which are desirable. so that he can guide himself towards those qualities. Or let us say, even that when he is developing them, then he doesn't reject them because he understands that they're supposed to be accepted. You know what I mean? Because you may actually find yourself becoming detached, and then that might frighten you. And then you think, oh my God, I'm getting detached. Maybe this isn't right. It's kind of something frightening, then you may, you know what I mean? So at least the devotee should understand what is considered desirable. At least that much. That in itself is a kind of a mental cultivation. Because we know what we, what's, you know, when, what, how we are going to become when we become pure devotees. We're going to become like this. So, yeah, we know what is desirable and what's our goal. And then we can hope for that or look for that, pray for that like this. It's not like you have to do something separate, but you can still desire those things and then recognize those good qualities in others like we did the other day with the other qualities. Right? So those were qualities which were direct from pure devotion. And as I said, most of these are also for devotees. You know, so 18 out of the 20 are particularly desirable. And even the ones that are for jnanis, we can apply them within our bhakti school also, in some sense. Different from what they do. We don't desire moksha, but we will develop philosophical in a hankering for the Swayam Bhagavan, absolute truth. Like that. Well, cleanliness indicates internal and external. So, you may not be able to judge what is the internal cleanliness unless you lived with someone, maybe, right? okay, so you're saying about non-devotees? So some non-devotees can develop some degree of external cleanliness. And even then, it may not be full Brahminical cleanliness, but it could be, say, at least in India, at least the ideas are there amongst Brahminical people. But the internal cleanliness is much more difficult and probably much more important in many ways. And that can only be done nowadays by chanting Hare Krishna. You know, so therefore, we go back to the, you know, premise that the devotees can only develop this. Haro abhaktasya kuto mahadguna. Where are the good qualities in non-devotees? It means they're not there. It's a kind of a question which indicates something more. Well, it depends on the devotee's eagerness to apply these things. But surely it's good to discuss them. Just like Radhanath Swami always hammers the point, at least in Chaupati, that devotees should be very respectful to everyone and very humble and respectful. And I've heard him like go on for 3 hours, just going, you know, giving one example after another, after another, after another, from the Bhagavatam, from Ramayana, from Mahabharata, from Gaura Lila, and it's just, you know, and then the next day we give a class on the same kind of thing. You know, it's like he's just hammering the devotees to be respectful to other people and showing how that you can't get anywhere unless you do that. And, you know, you can see that if you go to other communities, if you travel around a lot, like even within India and then especially outside to the West, then you go to the Chaupati, you can see that devotees really have imbibed that probably better than any other, you know, community. They're very respectful to people. So, I mean, even the hired help, you know, even the car drivers and the guys who answer the telephone, they bow down and they offer their pranam and they're very, you know, they're not even devotees. And even they're more humble than some of our top devotees in other temples. You know, that's what I saw at least. You know, even the guys who drive the cars are more humble than some of the devotees in the other temples. Because Radhanath Swami is hammering this point so much. So obviously, you know, hearing it does have an effect. You know? And of course, it's up to the individual devotees to apply these things. Hare Krishna. Yes. It appears so, yeah, because that's one of the 17 items, which is for both. Jnanis have to have a guru also. I think so, yeah. Yeah, they have to have a guru. I don't know what is their parampara, but yeah. I think so, yeah. I mean, generally there's family gurus, you know, like that. Some kind of guru has to be there. Yeah. Anything else about these 20? This is the process of knowledge, jnana. Well, there's the beginning and there's the end. Of course, you know, the bhakti doesn't come at the end of the list, but it's clear from our acharya's explanations that that's the most important point. And it is significant that Krishna begins with, you know, amanitvam. Because without that, you can't get anywhere. So he describes the staircase, which is ground floor, Right? You get in the building, that's the foundation, humility. So then after that you develop so many things. It could be simultaneous, and there can be also some development of certain qualities before other qualities, depending on the individual, or the person can develop them simultaneously. But as I said, it's like it's also a practice. These are processes that you practice, and gradually you develop them, you imbibe them, and they become like part of you, like a quality. Something more?
Yes.
The knowledge is the means by which you know something. So this is the processes by which you understand the soul and the super soul. So the object of knowledge is the soul and the super soul. And the means are these 20 things. Abhayam, Sattva, Samshuddhi. In 16? Qualities of? Very simple. Well, and devotees, both. There's different lists of qualities, you know. We just went through one that's specifically from bhakti. And these are, as I said, more like processes. This is the process of knowledge. 20 sadhanas. These are 20 sadhanas. And it's geared towards jnanis, including jnanis. No. Yeah, those bhakti develops jnana automatically. But I mean, Bhishma also thought that he needed to wait until the Uttarayana came, out of humility. But anyway, you know, they're great devotees, Arjuna, Bhishma. And so. But anyway, this jnana, as we know, if you look at the yoga ladder, jnana is just one component of bhakti. Because bhakti also has knowledge and detachment, along with work, meditation, and devotion. Right? So yoga means bhakti yoga, and jnana is just a component of bhakti. So a devotee, Janayat Yashu Varagyam Gyanam Chayada Haitakam. He gets knowledge too. And we're praying every day that we want Divya Gyan Vridhi Prakashito. We're begging the Guru every day for Gyana. So, you know, Gyana is not to be rejected. The only thing that's rejectable in the Jnana school is the desire for liberation, moksha, and merging. Because that's that's a kind of symptom of aversion to God. But we're using knowledge as a tool to come to God, to free ourselves from attachment to ignorance, things which are binding us, keeping us away from God. We're using that knowledge to cut the rope of attachment. Then that's good. I mean, a knife is neither good or bad. It's how you use it. So you can take a knife and go out on the street and stab somebody. Or you can go in the kitchen and cut vegetables and cook and feed people who are hungry. So the knowledge itself is like a sword. You know, you can use it to cut off your head by, you know, developing this kind of speculative knowledge just about the absolute, and develop the desire for merging. Or you can use that knowledge to understand Krishna's glories, his qualities of bhakti-vatsal, and, you know, how he manifests his energies, how he creates the world, how everything comes from him. And that's Aishvarya Gyan, which is positive, leads to bhakti. The vibhutis, that's also knowledge. Krishna's the taste of water, that's also knowledge. So we're using knowledge as a tool to help us to come to bhakti. So in this way, it's not, the knife is being used by the doctor to, you know, make an operation on the patient to help him to revive or to whatever, to overcome his disease. Yeah.
While answering my question, you were saying that if bhakti is done proper way, then you will lead to the proper qualities, like you will be the right direction in reaching them. But we see to do bhakti in proper way, like chanting Hare Krishna, the requirement is to chant with humility and tolerance. So that the quality are the requirements for to perform bhakti in proper way.
Of all these qualities, Mahaprabhu only mentioned humility in his Shikshashta. He didn't mention any of the other things. So those are specially meant to be cultivated. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that we should wear that shloka like a necklace around us, around our neck. And that is our Siddha Pranali mantra. So that's very important that we try to develop that. Well, you could say it's circular, that you need these things to chant Hare Krishna. And if you chant Hare Krishna, you automatically develop them. It's a trick. No, but it means that while chanting, you are meant to cultivate humility. And then the more humble you are, then the better your chanting will become. And the better your chanting becomes, then the more you'll develop more good qualities. Just like, you know, you go to a doctor, you have a little bit of faith. You've heard, your friend told me he was a good doctor, but you're still not sure. Then you go there, and he helps you. So then you have more faith. And then you go the second time, the third time. So then if he cures you every time, by the third time, your faith is strong. So there's some initial, you know, effort on your part. You hear that humility is good, then you try to develop that. And because you're practicing devotional service, the Lord's going to help you. In fact, He's going to insist on it. You know, because He's like also the guru, and He's going to train you and kind of remind you and sometimes kick you in the backside, you know, to make you humble, and sometimes completely smash you. Right? So gradually the humility is, you know, from your side, from His side, from the, you know, you're dealing with the material energy, it forces you. Gradually the devotee has to become humble. See, Karmi, he's like fighting against humility. Thinks, no, I won't do it. I won't surrender. Because he doesn't see the great value, you know, in doing that. But we're starting to understand that. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Narada Muni says, Paripakena dainyasya premajasram mitanyate parasparam tayoritam karya karana tekshate. He says that to Gopakumara that mature humility engenders prema. The two can be seen in a relationship of cause and effect. That humility is the cause and prema is the effect. And Sanat Goswami comments that the cause is always present in the effect. And the effect is present in the cause. So therefore, he said that if someone is humble, you can assume that he has prema. Like this, in many places, humility is described in that way. And here, particularly, paripakena means mature, developed, you know, pakka, humility. So anyway, you kind of run and then you get a little more, you go forward and a little more like this. It's not kind of some, you know, inexplicable circle. What did you do? He was a Rambhakta. Impersonalist. Right. Because he was impersonal. Well, Narada is speaking in Vaikuntha to Gopakumara. Right? They're in Vaikuntha discussing. So yeah, it's obvious that he's talking about bhakti, he's talking to a pure devotee, Gopakumara. So what happened to Ram Das? And that's it. End of story. Huh? Well. And even though he was helping a devotee, he didn't get any mercy. Doesn't seem right. Something has to give. And he's serving Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. Right? Anyway, we'd have to. That's Bhakti Sarvabhauma. We got to look at Chaitanya Charitamrita. I find it difficult to see. I mean, it seems like that's more. There's more to the story than. And I would have to look at that. Because that yogi, also Srivasa's friend who was taking milk, he was also at first rejected. But then he felt so happy that Mahaprabhu said that only after a million births, he said, oh, just, it means after a million births I'll be accepted by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's a very short time. It means ultimately he'll accept me. And he was happy. So when Mahaprabhu understood that, then he invited him back. And the man fell at Mahaprabhu's feet, and he became a Mahabhagavat. So, you know, it seems that that's exhibition of humility, even though he wasn't a devotee at that point. It was just a tapasvi, you know, tapayogi, something. So that means either there was some more offensive mentality in Ramadas, something that we don't know about, maybe. That's why he was not accepted. Because if he was humble and he was serving Raghunath Bhatta, even though he was a Brahmavadi, then the Lord could have, you know, converted him. Or usually would convert such a person. But that means that there was something which was an obstacle for him to do so. And that we have to look at Chaitanya Charitamrita, and then we have to look at the Tikas, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and see what's going on. Yes? No, but they, Brahmavadis, they think that God is an energy, right? And that they are part of that energy. So it's not like they think that they're better than others, but they think that we're all God. You know? So there's a kind of humility, there's a little space for humility there. Because he's thinking the ant is also Brahman, and I am Brahman, right? And the dog is Brahman, and the blind man is Brahman, and the, you know, whatever. So there, that's just life means Brahman, and Brahman is this undifferentiated, you know, energy. So it's not that he thinks he's Ishwar. He thinks Ishwar is a temporary transformation of Brahman. He's not. He doesn't think that I'm Ishwar. That's why this Ahamgraho Upasaka, he thinks, it was mentioned, I am Gopal. That means he realizes that there's a personal feature of God, Krishna, and he thinks I'm that. So that's Mayavadi philosophy, actually. You know, person thinks I'm Gopal. If he thinks that I'm going to merge into Brahman when I attain my goal, that's different than thinking I'm Gopal. And it's mentioned that. That's more offensive than merging into Brahman, is to want to merge into the body of the Lord. It's more offensive to the Lord. So Brahmavadis, you have to think of the four Kumaras. They're kind of just neutral transcendentalists who just don't know about God's personal features. Somehow they just have not come to that realization. Either they're lacking in association or something like that. Okay, so let's just read the last section, or the next section rather, from 13 to 19. So this is Gayam now, Jnana and then Gayam. This is the knowable. Gayam yat tad pravakshami yajgyatam ritam ashnute anadi mat param brahma na satan na saruchite. I shall now explain the knowable, knowing which you will taste the eternal. Brahman, the spirit, beginningless and subordinate to me, lies beyond the cause and effect of this material world. Prabhupada comments, the Lord has explained the field of activities and the knower of the field. He has also explained the process of knowing the knower of the field of activities. That was in the last section. Now he begins to explain the knowable, first the soul and then the supersoul. By knowledge of the knower, both the soul and supersoul, one can relish the nectar of life. So these, the Jivatma and the Paramatma can be known by practicing the sadhanas mentioned previously in 8 to 12. And Yatvamritam Ashnute means that you'll become immortal, like mentioned in 4.9, Janma Karma Chamev Divyam Evam Yo Veditakvita. That no more birth in the material world. And matparam brahma. So matpara, we've heard before. In 261. And in, where else was it? 12, 6 and 7. Matpara? Matpara, all right. Thank you. So here means that the spirit is subordinate to me. So it indicates the jiva. That is, has indicated devotees, or in the past, at least in that verse. So Prabhupada says, as explained in the second chapter, the living entity is eternal. This is also confirmed here. And he talks about the jiva. And then at the end of the second paragraph, he says, therefore, the description of Brahman mentioned here in this verse is in relation to the individual soul. And that this Vijnana Brahma, as opposed to Ananda Brahma. So the first verse is describing the individual soul by the word mat param brahma. And the jiva is anadi. There's no date in which the jiva was born. He's eternal. And he lies beyond the cause and effect of this material world. Okay, next verse. Sarvata paniparam tat sarvatokshi shuro mukham sarvata shritima loke sarvam avritya tishtati. Everywhere are his hands and legs, his eyes, heads and faces, and he has his ears everywhere. In this way the supersoul exists, pervading everything. So here is the description of the supersoul. Because the living entity doesn't have his hands and legs everywhere. But only the supersoul has. But this is also proof of personality of the supersoul. He has his hands and legs everywhere. Prabhupada said in a lecture in Bombay, 1973, Jnana means to realize that these hands, legs, eyes belong to Krishna. Bhakti means to become liberated from the misunderstanding that this is my hand, this is my leg. No, it is Krishna's. When we become purified, we understand this. Sarva pari vinir muktam tat paritvena niyama. And Vishnu Chakravarti explains, this means that Brahma has unlimited hands and feet in the forms of hands and feet of every visible entity extending from Brahma down to the ant. But then again, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur defines Brahma in the first verse as Parabrahman. And he, yeah, so he's got a different opinion. He says that that verse doesn't talk about the jiva, that's about the absolute truth, the supreme absolute truth. But then how does he explain Mat Param Brahma? Huh? What do you think? He says that this is explained further later on, Brahmanohi Pratishtaham. That the impersonal Brahman is subordinate to me. That I am its foundation. Anyway, what to do? The other commentators, it's like they try to avoid the issue. They write these commentations and they never say whether it's the jiva or the supersoul. They just say Brahma, Brahma. Brahma is eternal. Brahma is not of this, above cause and effect. Da, 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 da. The whole commentary, I'm looking, you know, where is it going to say jiva? And it just doesn't say, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And so they avoid the issue. But Prabhupada hits it head on, you know. This is the jiva, he says, and then he commentaries about the jiva, and he says it very strongly. He said, Madhpara means he's subordinate to God. So we're all subordinate to God. And but anyway, we do understand that the knowable, it is, like, just as the Kshatriya is two, the knowable Gaya is two, and also later we'll see the Purusha is also two. So it does seem consistent that the Gaya is also two. I mean, usually when there's a section describing the Paramatma, the first verse would not be about the Jiva. It would be all together about the Supersoul. So in that sense, it would take some, you know, some evidence to show that this first verse is separate from the rest of these. Because from now, we're not talking about the jiva here. It's obvious in this verse, it cannot possibly be about the jiva. But anyway, this is Vishnu Chakravarti says, this is how, you know, he has hands and legs everywhere. And this is because Brahma is expanded as all the living entities, and living entities have hands and legs everywhere, and this way he has his hands and legs everywhere. And in Prabhupada's lecture, he also kind of indicates this, that these arms and legs belong to Krishna, they're not mine. So whether you consider Brahma or Parabrahman, He's expanded through the arms and legs of the living entities. Of course, we know the Supersoul has his own arms and legs, too. And there's some evidence about the Adidaiva, Adibhautik, Adhyatmic self, that the demigods are also kind of enjoying through the senses of the living beings, the conditioned living beings, in different ways. That's also some kind of similarity. Okay, let's go to the next verse. Sarvindriya gunabhasam sarvindriya vivarjitam asaktam savarvichaiva nirgunam gunam moktricha. The Supersoul is the original source of all senses, yet he is without senses. He is unattached, although he is the maintainer of all living beings. He transcends the modes of nature, and at the same time, he is the master of all the modes of nature. So he's quite a controversial personality. Right? He's the abhasam, the source of all qualities and senses. But sarvendriya vivarjitam, he's without senses, all senses. So something that God has no form because of these words. I think, because they quote this, sarvendriya vivarjitam. Your Supreme Lord, he doesn't have any senses. But the last verse said he had so many arms and legs. Right? He has senses. So this means that this is talking about he has no material arms and legs. That's the understanding. And that's confirmed in the Shrutis, in the Kena Upanishad, first chapter, second verse, tach chakshusha chakshuhu. He's the eye of the eye. He's the original eye of all eyes. And Prabhupada quotes Shvetashvatara Upanishad 3:19. Apani paru javano grahita. The Lord has no hands which are material contaminated, but he has his hands and accepts whatever sacrifice is offered to him. Apani paru javano grahita. So he doesn't have any hands and legs, but he accepts all the offerings. How does he do that? It has transcendental hands and transcendental legs. Okay, next verse. Bahirantascha bhutanam acharam charame bacha suksmatvat tad abhigyayam durastam chantike chatat. The Supreme Truth exists outside and inside of all living beings, the moving and non-moving. Because he is subtle, he is beyond the power of the material senses to see or to know. Although far, far away, he is also near to all. So this is interesting. Here, we're talking about the gayam, but here it says avigyayam. The knowable is unknowable. It's hard to know. For the material senses, the gayam is avigyayam. The knowable is unknowable. He's outside and inside of all living entities. Prabhupada said, you must do tapas to see Krishna, both inside and outside. Ararito yari haris tapasa tatakim antar bahir yari haris tapasa tatakim. If you can see Krishna within and without, then all your tapasya is finished. You are perfect now. Prabhupada said in a lecture in Bombay in 1973. And then he said, vedeshu dulavam adulavam atmavattam. So generally, yes, on the mundane plane, he's unknowable. But with bhakti of the soul, then one develops a higher knowledge, adhoksajya or aprakrita knowledge, and then can understand the Supreme Absolute Truth's personal features. And Prabhupada says, we cannot see or understand with these material senses. So the seeing and the knowing is done with atindriyam, which is mentioned in the sixth chapter, the super senses. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says he's not the object of direct perception because his form and attributes are different from material forms and qualities. Thus he's millions of miles away for ignorant people, but for the enlightened, he, as the Supersoul, is more near than a person living in the same house, being situated in their bodies. But for the ignorant persons, he's more than millions of miles away. But for the enlightened soul, he's closer than the person living in your same house, than your own family member. And Durastam Chantiketchata, he's far away, and he's very close. Just like you hear this, Tad ajati, tad dure, santike. Tad antarasya sarvasya, tadu sarvasya vayata. He walks and does not walk. He's near and he's far away. He's inside and outside all beings. Tad dure, tad vantike. Same words are used. Avibhaktam cha bhuteshu vibhaktam iva cha stitam bhuta bhatri cha tajyeyam krasishnu pravavishnu cha. Although the Supersoul appears to be divided among all beings, he is never divided. He is situated as one. Although he is the maintainer of every living entity, it is to be understood that he devours and develops all. So he is avibhaktam and vibhaktam. He appears to be divided, but he is not divided. So Prabhupada gives the example to explain this in the purport. He says, does this mean that he has become divided because he's in everyone's heart? No. He is one. The example is given of the sun. The sun at the meridian is situated in its place. But if one goes for 5,000 miles in all direction and asks, where is the sun? Everyone will say it's shining on his head. In the Vedic literature, this example is given to show that he is undivided. He is situated as if divided. Prabhupada tells a story about when he was walking his son. When his son was like 4 or 5 years old, and he was pointing at the moon. And then they were walking. He said, but he would say, Daddy, the moon is following us. And I think that, because he's walking, and still he looks up and it's still in the same place. So, I mean, to a child or someone, he may think that the absolute is this Paramatma is divided in everyone's body, but we have also the example of the water pots and the sun. So when you look, you see all these reflections, but the sun is one. So the Supersoul is situated in this way. He's just reflected or expanded into everyone's heart to perform his function as the Antaryami. And the Shakshi, he's the witness and the guide. But actually he himself is situated in one place. Shirodakshai Vishnu was there in that Shvetadvip. And that in this universe, that planet, the Dhruvaloka or the Shishumar. Text 18. Jyotisam api tad jyotis tamasa param uchyate jnanam geyam jnanagamyam hridi sarvasya vishtitam. He is the source of all light and all luminous objects. He is beyond the darkness of matter and is unmanifested. He is knowledge. He is the object of knowledge and he is the goal of knowledge. He is situated in everyone's heart. So Jyotisham api tad jyotis, he's the source of light in all luminous objects. And the Shrutis confirm this. Turyas tapati Tejasendraha. By his radiance, the sun becomes luminous and gives heat. And Prabhupada describes that in the Vedas we see that the spiritual kingdom is not required to have a sun or a moon, because the effulgence of the Lord is present. So only in this world the sun and moon are required. But in Goloka there is a sun and the moon. When there's rasa dance, there's a moon, and there's a sun also. But it's not required for light, because there's enough light. But it's just there to create a nice atmosphere for the rasa dance. And here's an interesting thing, that the Lord is jnanam, jnayam, and jnanagamyam. And it means that he's attainable by the previous described means of jnana sadhana, such as humility, says Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura. Because jnanagamyam means that he's approachable or accessible or perceivable or understandable or intelligible or desirable. That's what gamya means. So he's accessible or perceptible by knowledge. Therefore he's called jnana gamya. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura says he's called jnana when he's situated in the chitta vritti, in your mind. But he's called Gaya when he's manifest in a form outside. Huh? Dhruva Maharaj has said something similar? Uh-huh. All right, yes. So the Lord can appear in the mind and on the outside. So when he's jnana, he is jnana in the form of knowledge in the mind, and then when he can take the form of the object of the knowledge also. That's how the Lord is jnana, jnaya, and jnanagamyam. He's attainable by knowledge too. So that jnana means chit potency, not material knowledge. Okay, last verse. This is the conclusion of the section on jnaya. And Krishna actually concludes the whole chapter so far. What he's spoken. Iti kshatram tata jnanam geyam choktam samasataha madbhakta etavigyaya madbhavayo papadyate. Thus the field of activities, the body, knowledge, and the knowable have been summarily described by me. Only my devotees can understand this thoroughly and thus attain to my nature. So here the Lord concludes regarding knowledge about the kshatra and kshatragya and jnana gyayam by mentioning its adhikari and its result. Who is eligible for this and what is the result of this? So he says, only my devotees can understand this. And what did they get? They attain to my nature. Madbhavaya upapanyate. So you see, iti kshatram tatak jnanam gyayam choktam samasata. I have made a summary of kshatra, jnanam, and gyayam so far, he says. Only my devotees can know this. Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, jnana is nothing but the sitting place of Bhakti Devi, like the throne. And Baladeva Dibhusha mentioned that some earlier. Jnana is just is simply nothing but the sitting place of Bhakti Devi. And Prabhupada summarizes the chapter thus far, giving the sections which we have given you, and this is from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. This is in his second paragraph. Now to summarize, one may understand the verses 6 and 7, beginning with Mahabhutani and continuing to Chaitanya Driti, analyze the material elements and certain manifestations of the symptoms of life. These combine to form the body, or the kshetra, the field of activities. Then verses 8 through 12, from Amanitvam through Tattva Vijnanartha Darshanam, describe the process of knowledge for understanding both types of knower and the field of activities, namely the soul and the supersoul. So that's jnanam. Then verses 13 through 18, beginning with anadi matparam and continuing through riddhi sarvasya vishtitam, describe the soul and the supersoul, or the Supreme Lord. So kshetra, jnanam, and gayam, he describes this section. 6, 7, 8 to 12, 13 to 18. Thus, three items have been described. Kshetra, the field of activity, the body, and the process of understanding, jnanam, and both soul and supersoul, gayam. It is especially described here that only the unalloyed devotees of the Lord can understand these three items clearly. So for these devotees, the Gita is fully useful. It is they who can attain the goal, the nature of the Lord, Krishna. In other words, only devotees and not others can understand Bhagavad Gita and derive the desired result. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur adds that, and the jnanis who have some mix of bhakti, they can also understand. So if there's some bhakti there, then the person could be considered a devotee in a broader sense, if he's even a bhakti mishra jnani, or if he's a jnana mishra bhakta. Can also understand. But then the nature that they attain is different, because then madbhavaya means sayuja mukti. And madbhavaya for the ananya bhakta means prema bhakti. That's described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his commentary. The devotee, pure devotee, gets prema bhakti. But Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes that the jnani who has a little bhakti, he attains sayuja mukti. And that's what Krishna can also mean while he's saying this. But Prabhupada kind of makes things more direct than. He directs the reader. This only that bhakti, only bhakti.
Why didn't the other acharyas do that? Why didn't he do that?
Why did Krishna? Or why the other acharyas?
Yeah, why didn't they? I mean, acharyas all right, but I mean, if you see the devotees directly.
Different acharyas have different views. And also they may have different social, historical contexts. Prabhupada's the first one who's sending this knowledge to the Western world, to the land of Malachas. And it's in, deep in Kali Yuga, when people are really Mayavadis and speculators and, into mysticism and anything but Krishna. Yeah, anyway. It's all perfect. There's no discrepancy. Yes.
Can you say something about these five types
Okay, but maybe we should have questions about this section first before we jump the topic. Let's hold on, all right? Let's have some topical questions, yeah, first. He didn't really talk about it very much, did he? He didn't expand upon it in this section. That was like the first thing he said. That, and, you know, one who knows his field is the Kshatriya, and I am also the Kshatriya. That's all he said. Yeah. So he, but the other things he described, like 6 and 7, it's all Kshatriya. And then 8 to 12 is Jnana. And 13 to 18 is Gaya. So it was, he didn't say much about the Kshatriya. But it's understood. I mean, maybe that's why Vishwanath added this commentary to keep it consistent with the flow of the well, it's Krishna is like trying to pull the jnanis into his camp. Like if the jnanis, they read this and they think yeah, and then they read this verse and they go maybe I should become a devotee? No. Anyway, let's read more. See what happens. Maybe I can avoid this somehow, you know. And again, they may think, yeah, I'm also his devotee. And I will merge into him, my Lord. That's another way to look at it. Yeah. And the jnanis, they may not, you know, feel separate from the term being bhakta. Another thing is the last verse, the verse before that said, avibhaktam, vibhaktam. So now he says, no. You know what I mean? It's kind of like a play on words. They already, and then they may not understand what Krishna is saying. Exactly what he's saying. It's kind of like a spin on the ball. Anyway, there's so many different things we could say about that. There's no comment here about these things. Anything else? Yes.
Kshetragya and Gaya are the same only. Kshetragya is soul and
spirit. Yeah, they're the same, actually, but they're just in a different context. Kshetragya is only the knower of the field, but Gaya, that's that which is to be attained through knowledge. It's the same, the soul and the super soul. And the Purusha is going to be the same also, the soul and the super soul. Yeah. But that's only in context to Prakriti. Yeah. So therefore, the chapter is just called Purusha Prakriti Vibhag Yoga. The understanding, the divisions of Purusha and Prakriti. Vibhag means divisions. That's in Gita Press. Yeah. Anyway, as we said, it's the same. But Krishna kept Prakriti and Purusha for the end. Maybe he wanted to save the best for last. Yes? Yes. Yeah, Vedeshu Dulabham. Well, that's probably why Bhaktivinoda Thakur says Jnana is just the sitting place of Bhakti Devi. Right? Because Jnana alone cannot give full knowledge. There has to be Bhakti mixed in to the Jnana. So, and else we said there's different kinds of knowledge. So, here's what he's talking about, the super soul. Right? Krishna is saying he can be approached by knowledge. Right? That's what he's saying. But not me. But the super soul you can approach by knowledge. Isn't it? That's what he's saying. Anything more?
We see if somebody is preaching to somebody, we take care that these terms being used will not be ambiguous. Like, you know, simple or new devotees preach, it's so simple that Krishna doesn't have senses, means he doesn't have material senses, he has spiritual. So why so much ambiguity? Krishna knows that this is going to be referred, this will be referred by so many millions of people in the future. So we are just focused on simplicity.
No, but you have to understand, that's his whole approach. It's like paroksha, is a paroksha-vad. Is it called a paroksha-vad? Indirect, kind of, you know, like in the Bible there's all these, what is it called? English word? Huh? What's the English word? And like in the Bible, Jesus spoke in parables. Parables, kind of, you know, mystical sutras. So Krishna's doing this on purpose. Because he knows that there's a lot of people that are into jnana. So he says, that supreme is Sarvendriya Vivarjitam. I think, yes. Sarvendriya Gunavasam, Sarvendriya Vivarjitam. And the jnanis feel great ecstasy. And then they come and say, Mad Bhakta Etta Vigyaya. Oh. Yes, I will become a devotee someday. But right now, I'm relishing this. Lord is without senses. He gives them some scope for, you know what I mean? I mean, yeah, hope or whatever. You know, he gives them some scope for their understanding. They're kind of like the Vijnanamoy. And they're not ready for Anandamoy. So just a little bit, Mad Bhakta Etta Vijaya, just on the sides. But the main verses are like, you know, for the Jnanis. All of them are like that, isn't it? These are like Upanishadic shlokas, very much. Just like we quoted tad ajati, tad naijati, tad dure, tad vantike, it's just like right from the Upanishads. All of these verses, avibhaktam shabhuteshu, you look in Kena Katu Upanishads, I'm sure you'll find all of these terms and practically the same shlokas. Right? This Upanishads are meant for those jnani or brahmavadis. That they're getting encouragement, and at the same time, Krishna's putting a little spin on it. You know, Mad Bhakta Etta Vigyaya. My devotees can understand. And then they think, yeah, I'm also his devotee. And he's, you know. I don't know what they think. You know, it depends how offensive they are. They may think, yeah, he's just, you know, my the absolute truth who's come as Vasudev. You know, his body is temporary. Or they may think that, oh, Vasudev's body is eternal, but not the ultimate feature of the Supreme, which I know, like that. Or they may, who knows? They may think, I also like Vasudev, but I like Brahman more. You know, there may be different feelings in the, so Krishna allows them, you know. One time Prabhupada was giving a class, and he said, so many people, they want to merge into Brahman. So Krishna says, yes, come on, merge into me. Like this, Krishna, Krishna allows them to kind of, he fulfills their desires. Because Krishna is very liberal. He's just encouraging everybody, but at the same time, he's adding little bhakti, adding little bhakti, adding little bhakti. And gradually they become filled with bhakti. They read by the end of the Gita, you know, they become a devotee. Hopefully. Okay, we should stop now. Hare Krishna. Tomorrow at 4:30. Yeah? Okay.